Hi, I'm Sean J. Kennedy, and this is Backstage at the Enharmonic. Today's guest is Trey O'Toole, a good friend and great drummer from Ventura, California. This past November, we were both out at the Percussive Arts Society International Convention, and we had the chance to hang out with Dr. Sherry Marigold of the Diva Jazz Orchestra. Trey was telling us a story about how when he was 16, his father offered to help buy him a car, and instead of getting that car, he got one of Neil Peart's drum sets. Mid-story, Sherry interrupted Trey and said, "Wait a minute, this is an incredible story. Sean, you have to put him on your podcast to share this story with the world." So that's what this is, folks. I hope you enjoy Trey's story about how he got the drum set of his dreams. Hey, Trey O'Toole, welcome to Backstage at the Enharmonic. I'm glad this is finally happening. We first had the idea to get together and chat this way on my podcast back in Indianapolis when we were at the Percussive Arts Society International Convention. And we happened to be having dinner with our mutual friend, Dr. Sherry Marigold. And she is the one that inspired us to do this. We were just chatting and she basically said time out in the conversation and said, "Wait a minute, this should be on your podcast. You have to interview Trey for your podcast." And we're both like, "Really? Okay, let's do it." So since then, we've been swapping emails back and forth and text messages. So it's finally happening. So welcome. And why don't we start out by you telling us what you're doing, all the great work you're doing out there in Ventura, California.
Well, thanks, John. Thanks for having me. And thanks for making the effort to wear through some friction, be persistent. And here we are. So I'm glad we're making it happen. And of course, special thanks to Dr. Sherry. She is a tower of inspiration to me. I love watching her play and talking to her. It was a great hang and looking forward to doing it again next year.
Indeed.
So what's up with me? Well, I have a Bachelor of Music in Orchestral Percussion from UCSB that I got back in the late 90s. I'm co-owner of a music school called Pulse Drumming Music Academy in Ventura, California. We're celebrating our 20th year this year, so I'm very proud of that fact.
Congrats.
Thank you. Different manners of judging success, and kind of in my book, I get to do what I love, and it's 20 years into it, so sustenance is sort of my definition of survival, so I'm still happy to be in it. We're very active in schools prior to the pandemic, and once that happened, we really changed our model. So it would be fair to say over the 20 years, we've had many plans and really continue to take a right variation on the path and a left variation on the path to adapt and to do what we need to do to stay in business. We were a full retail store for 17 years. So we really just tried to put all of the things that excited us together, the educators, the education, the gear, all in one spot for Ventura, and happy to still be doing it. We don't have hours for our store anymore. What used to be 11 to 7 every day is just by appointment now, but it's actually more to the point and more successful that way. Accomplish a lot more that way because the people who are generally contacting me have a very specific goal as opposed to walking in your favorite drum store and being a looky-loo and then you know, seeing the best price you can find anywhere else.
Right.
So so now mostly focused on education, which is really where my heart's at. And of course, I don't think that you really deserve to be claiming to be an educator if you're not a performer and out showing that you have at least some control of your craft. So I have a few projects that I'm in here. I have my own jazz ensemble, a beautiful club here that just popped up in the last couple of years called The Grape. And those guys are some of my best friends. So they have a wonderful venue for jazz. Unfortunately, it's 21 and over, so a lot of my students can't get in there where we used to do clinics during the day and then performances in the evening. Had a whole slew of really great clinicians come through for a couple years. My partner, Kim, who founded Pulse Drumming, was really mostly responsible for that. I would just tell her who I was inspired by, and she actually had the wherewithal to pick up the phone or send an email and bravely go at it. And really, you know, a little bit about the story about Pulse Drumming, she really bravely went at it. What she was an emergency room nurse of some 20 some years, and she had two special needs kids and started to practice African drumming and saw so much progress in her two kids with right and left hemisphere integration, mind motion integration, that she gave up her career as a nurse and started Pulse Drumming.
Wow.
And it really wasn't, pardon my saying, so much of a drum store at the time. It was clearly her foray into wanting to serve the community. So a pretty long story, a little shorter, is a gentleman by the name of Dr. Matthew Talmadge offered me a sub gig for him. He had an Afro-Cuban class going on at Pulse. We were up in Santa Barbara, and he asked me if I wanted to drive down to Ventura and teach a class for him. I considered that quite a privilege since I was only getting my bachelor at the time. And walked into Pulse drumming, and really it was more almost kind of like a, I don't know, I guess you call it like a journey home kind of new agey place. I walked through some belly dancing gear and incense and essential oils and a few djembes, but that was about it. And so I had a briefcase in my hand and sheet music hanging out of my mouth and a conga in my other hand, and it's four middle-aged ladies in the room who are the students who were waiting for me. And that began quite an adventure, because I had a curriculum plan that essentially I threw out the window when they told me that they had never read music and didn't know clave rhythms yet. And I said, okay, well then we'll start at the beginning. We're going to clap some clave. And approximately a year after that, Kim asked me to become her business partner, which I jumped at the chance to be involved in that. And at that time, her husband, bless his soul, he was still with us. And unfortunately, he was a victim of the Chatsworth crash. So She lost her husband right after the three of us became partners. And really good friends, both of our families, I guess we would call one united family. And that's kind of been Kim's vision, is to be able to bring a sense of community through percussion. And like I said, here we are 20 years later.
Let's talk about what happened when we were having dinner with Dr. Sherry Miracle. You started telling a story about one of your biggest inspirations, and that's why Dr. Sherry said, you have to record this. So it's your story. So why don't you relay that story to all of the listeners about the drum set you got, your inspiration, et cetera.
Well, thanks. Okay. So it starts off, I was 15 years old, becoming more musically aware every day, sort of finding out what I liked. And I really, you know, I like almost all genres of music that I can think of. In fact, I don't even so much try to put them into their own categories in terms of new types of genres that may exist, like funk, which is, you know, something that my younger kids are bringing to me now. I say, what kind of music do you like? And they say funk, and that's P-H-O-N-K. And I wasn't even aware of what that is until my students brought it to me. So I like good music. I like good performers. And so I try to play all the music that I can across all the different genres that there are. But I was very much inspired by Neil Peart. I remember some of the guys that were older than myself in junior high, back in the days of a boombox where you held up speakers on the side of your shoulder. One of the guys a year older than me gave me the jam box, and it had Moving Pictures cassette in it. And I started off listening to side two of it, which was The Camera Eye. And I had these tremendously long tom fills that went around that immediately when I heard them, I was like, wow, what is this? And then just continued to listen and dig into Neil more and more. And my dad was working for Ford. I'm originally from Detroit. And he thought for sure, getting ready to be 16, I would want a car. And so he was ready to sign a loan for me so I could get a car, co-sign a loan. And I said, I don't think so, Dad. I said, how about you help me get a drum set? I'll learn how to play it and make some money, and then I can get my own car. And he couldn't believe it, but he did advocate it. So heralding back to pre-digital times, I was just a kid and looking at my record albums and enjoying the artwork that comes along with it. Neil's lyrics are poetry under themselves, so I would take the inside jacket out and read all those lyrics and read about the equipment they were playing, just try to educate myself, and it was never really a chore. I was magnetized to it. I couldn't stop, quite frankly. So just so happened that towards the end of the liner notes, said special thanks to Neil Graham at the Fort Wayne Percussion Center in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And in my little 15-year-old brain, I guess I just connected a couple dots and thought, well, I know how to pick up the phone and call information, so I'm going to dial Fort Wayne Percussion Center and I'm going to ask for Neil Graham. So I picked up the phone, called, said, hello, is Neil Graham there? He said, one moment. Next thing I know, I'm talking to him. And I said, wow, I can't believe I got through to you this easily. I'm about to buy a drum set and I want to buy an exact replica of Neil Peart's kit, every single piece, because I was very much inspired by the peripherals, the glockenspiel, the tubular bells, the Chinese bell tree, the line chimes, temple blocks. That stuff had as much of my attention as any of the rest of the battery, so to speak. And he chuckled at me. He laughed and said, my friend, I get a couple of these calls every week. It's an immense amount of work and an awful lot of money. Do you have any idea what you're talking about here? And I said, no, I need you to tell me what all that stuff is and how much it's going to cost. I'll repeat myself. I can't go to that much work without knowing if you have any idea what you're dealing with. I said, well,
sure.
Ed sitting next to me here, he offered me a car and I told him I wanted a drum set instead.
Wow. So amazing.
He said, may I speak to him, please? And I just handed over the phone. My dad said, the kid's for real. I'm beside myself that this is what he wants to do, but I am going to co-sign the loan. So let's go. And a couple days later, perhaps a week later, he ended up sending me a full list of everything behind Neil's kit. And that totaled much more than I had intended on spending at the time.
Of course.
So I curtailed that kit to a $6,500 purchase. It was in 1985.
Wow. That's a huge change.
Yeah. And so he was playing Tama drums at the time. And obviously people who know about Neil know he did play Ajax. He did play Slingerland. He then, you know, went to Tama. And so after we had gone through all of the drums and I negated a couple things such as the tubular bells, we had the kit ordered. He said, well, this is a big one. It's going to come all the way from Japan. So you're looking at probably somewhere around 6 to 9 months. I said, okay. And about 3 months in or so, while I was trying to be patient and not doing a very good job, Neil contacted me and he said, I have some hush-hush news for you, but I want to share it with you because we have a possibility to do something I think you'd really be interested in. He said, do I have your word that you're going to keep this under your hat? Of course, I'm like, yeah, man, tell me what's going on with Neil. Tell me. So he confided in me that Neil had just recently visited the Fort Wayne Percussion Center and had a vertical comparison of drum sets. I'm not certain exactly how many there were there. My guess would be 7, 8, 9 mm-hmm. different kits. Probably consisting of the names of that time, which I think at that time, DW wasn't actually on the list. So he had a Maple Tama kit, a Birch Tama kit, a Yamaha kit, I believe a Premier kit, a Ludwig kit. And went kit to kit playing them. And apparently, and this is according to Neil Graham speaking to me, that Neil Peart decided to change from Tama to go to Ludwig at that time based off of the 13-inch Tom. That was the drum that separated all of the other drum sets for Neil. And he made the switch to Ludwig at that time. So essentially what Neil Graham said was, I have the kit that he played on here.
Amazing.
And he interested in that. And I said, are you kidding me? I get to have something with Neil Peart juju? Of course, I want to get that. And so we had to make a couple more accommodations because there were, you know, some things like a gong bass drum versus a 20-inch floor tom. And I, being the crazy little kid that I was, thinking that more was better at the time, I looked at Billy Cobham's kit and Simon Phillips' kit. I saw the four rack toms over the two bass drums. I thought, well, Neil Peart doesn't play a 14-inch tom, so I'm going to put a 14 between the 13 and the 15, and my kit will be bigger than Neil Peart's. Of course, I wasn't even very good at playing one drum at the time.
Right.
Much less all the rest of those drums. But that's what I did. And so so after a couple months, the fun culmination of this story is my best buddy, he's a doctor now, Dr. Steve Joslin, and I jumped in his Escort, pulling an open back U-Haul trailer and drove from South Detroit to Fort Wayne, Indiana to pick up the kit. We spent most of the day there with Neil Graham looking through things. One difference that I also made was I bought a great big Tama cage to put it on. Not having any idea of the difficulty of cage versus separated stands.
Right.
Like playing with the most gigantic set of Tinker Toys I'd ever played with in my life all day long. Had a nice dinner with him, and then drove back with all those drums actually in an open back.
How long of a drive is that?
About 3.5 hours.
Oh my God.
In fact, Neil had, I think, one of his only couple clinics there. I went to Neil Peart Clinic in 1986. If I remember correctly, he also did Percussion Institute. And he was, Neil did not enjoy those experiences, to my understanding. So I feel grateful to be there. I think his line was, quote unquote, felt like he was in a fishbowl. And so I'm happy that I was able to attend that. Well worth the 3.5 hour drive to spend 8 hours with Neil Peart, right?
So amazing.
It was amazing. And that really began my crash course direction into becoming a drummer percussionist. Was I knew at that time I really didn't have a choice. I had to walk that path.
Right. Now, did you have another drum kit before that you were banging around on, or?
Only stuff that I borrowed from my school, which was, you know, not good.
In fact, okay.
Mostly marching around my backyard. I lived in the country. I had a big 3-acre backyard, and I put a marching drum over, and it was still, you know, just a sling, like, still the belt where you're kicking the drum. And I would march around in my backyard practicing rudiments, and I played keyboard since I was 4, played some saxophone. So I had some musical awareness, some harmonic awareness, not really well developed, but it was all just kind of going forward at that time. So no, it was my first drum set. And I remember another one of my favorite drummers, Bill Bruford, talking about persons just such as myself with the audacity to go out and buy 16 pieces at one time without control over a single drum, or even my hands for that matter, with no sticks.
Mm-hmm. So, I can hear Bill's voice saying that too, in his sardonic British, you know, how dare you type of prose that he would use.
And I forget he also talking about the Neil Peart clones. Admittedly, I was one of those guys out in the audience, you know, playing right along. The first time I saw them was 1984. So you could tell by the timeline that I'm giving you, I kind of became aware of them in 84. Got into their discography, and by 85 I had found the connection to Neil Graham. And then by the end of 1986, beginning of 87, I had my kit, and Neil was on to his Ludwig kit. One thing that was really amazing for me at the time when I picked up my drum set is Neil Graham had Neil Peart's Slingerland snare, which is his workhorse as far as I understand it, and it had been recovered in the pink opalescent finish that he used. So I actually got to see that drum before Neil got to see it himself. Wow. To hold on to it and check it out. And
amazing.
That was quite something. And I was so surprised with the color. I'm like, whoa, he's going from this gigantic candy apple red to an opalescent pink.
Yeah.
It was just beautiful under lights. So I understand why he went with it.
Sure. Amazing. You know, and this reminds me of some of my current students. A lot of times they'll come into lessons, and the first or second lesson, I'm usually like, why are you here? What inspired you to come take drum lessons? And by and large, I don't know, it seems over the last, I've been teaching lessons, I guess, 30 years now. It seems like less and less kids are coming with a distinct like point of reference, like you're talking about with Neil. For me, it was Gene Krupa. I heard a cassette. I'm like, what is this? And Gene Krupa's playing, you know, he was like the impetus for me to start playing. But a lot of my young students, they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, name me a drummer. And that's one of my challenges. I give all my students homework now. I'm like, who do you listen to? And they're like, I don't even know who. Red Hot Chili Peppers. I'm like, who's the drummer? They're like, I don't know. I'm like, there's your homework this week. Find out his name, find out who he listened to, and then starts basically a diary of drummers that I make them all keep notes on, so they can find that family tree of how we're all connected to each other musically. So your story's so inspiring, and I'm right there with you.
Thanks. And thanks for being willing to let me share it with you, because it was life-changing for me. That that kit I still have in the studio. I still teach on it. I can break it into three separate component kits. So really the truth is everybody who comes to study with me at Paul Strumming is going to sit down on the kit that Neil Peart played on.
And oh my God.
Enough. I did some backline for my friend at the Grapes, and Danny Carey also played on that kit.
Wow. So
now it has both Neil and Danny Juju on it, so to speak.
Are they the same heads?
Nope.
Okay. Nope. Did you save the original heads?
Nope.
No?
Okay. Nope. But I can tell you something from seeing both of those guys, you know, firsthand and close up. Their heads don't last that long because they hit the drums.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Both of those guys. In fact, I don't mind saying, not harder than I can, but harder than I generally wish to hit the drums.
Sure, sure thing. Now, I'm sure this will be possible. Since you said it still exists, do you have pictures and videos of this drum kit in action?
Certainly. Yes,
great.
I do.
So how about this? I know we're going to do it in the future, but I'll put some links when I post this thing. So anyone that's listening, if they want to check out your drum kit, picture or video wise, we can get a link up there right into the description of this podcast.
Thank you. And there was one gentleman, his name is escaping me at the moment. I know that he was actually on the road with Jimmy Chamberlain with the Smashing Pumpkins recently doing tech work. One day his name is Victor. And he actually is one of the biggest drum tech nerds that I've ever seen. His kit is huge, like Terry Bozzio style.
Okay.
And he seems to know the story about Neil Graham, those however many kits there were, 7, 8, 9 different drum sets. And I believe he did write an article about it. I haven't been on social media for a couple years now. My business partner handles that. My fingers are in other parts of the pie, so to speak. So I can't really remember where I had ran into it, but I think he was making rather long submissions on Facebook and I might have read the story there. So,
okay.
Out to him and try and correlate some of this data to make sure that we're in agreement for wherever I can fill in holes in the story.
Sure.
It was only a few years ago now that I'm 54.
Okay. I hear you. Where can people find out about Trey O'Toole and all the great teaching and playing you're doing?
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's just pulsedrumming.com, www.pulsedrumming.com.org. That'll take you there. Tell you about the mission, tell you about the things that we've done in the community, tell you about the specific natures of our curriculum. But we really teach everything percussion, which is quite a statement since I don't even know how many things that consists of. But I'm just trying to surround myself with people who know more than I do. And that's part of the reason that I feel that I'm still in the game is either I'm teaching and I have my teacher hat on, or I'm not teaching and I'm a student. And even when I am teaching, I'm still trying to be a student because my students have taught me as much as I'm sure I've ever taught many of them.
So Trey, incredible to spend some more time with you, even though it's virtual. It's always a pleasure to talk with you and hear you talk. Your story was so inspiring about the Neil Peart kit. I can't wait to see some pictures of that. Like I said, I'm going to put them in the link to this thing. And any of our listeners that are out in California near Ventura that want to go to your brick and mortar location and get some lessons or just find out more about the great stuff you're doing, everyone should go to pulsedrumming.com.
Yes, please.
Excellent. And again, to promote our organization, Percussive Arts, I know Trey, there's the logo. Yeah, I have mine in the car. I wear it everywhere. If you're a drummer, a drum enthusiast, want to find out more about drums, there is so much information and camaraderie available to you through Percussive Arts Society. I would really encourage everyone to go to www.pas.org and find out about membership. I'm pretty sure you can get yearly memberships for less than $100, and you have hundreds of years worth of resources, basically. So much stuff. So I would really encourage everyone to do that. And Trey, any parting comments from you?
Well, agreed, certainly, about the Percussive Arts Society. It helped me immensely, and it as an entity is so responsible for me meeting so many people just like yourself, and I suppose that leads me to wanting to thank Dr. Sherry for recommending this, and then shout out to all of our people there who are working behind the scenes, Joshua Simons and everybody from the top down who makes it all happen. If you can get to Indianapolis in November, and you have any love for anything under the sun percussionist, you will not be disappointed.
Amen. I can't say it any better than that, Trey. So we'll end with that. So, my friend, I can't wait to see you again in person out in Indiana in November of this year. And thanks for listening, everyone, and have a great day.
Be well. Thanks.
Thanks for listening, everyone. And to check out more about Trey and his team out in Ventura, California, be sure to visit pulsedrumming.org. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a shout out on whatever platform you listen to this on. And please subscribe to Backstage at the Enharmonic. Thanks for listening.